Good morning. My name is Anna, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Michelle Behar, Public Relations Coordinator for Kelley Blue Book.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this month's Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader Sales Day conference call. Both Tim Fleming, analyst for Kelley Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, senior analyst for Auto Trader, will be speaking today on November 2016 results, followed by a Q&A session. First, we have Tim Fleming.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, everyone, for joining today as we track November sales results. So just to recap, from our forecast for the month, we had forecasted 17.7 million SAR for the month, approximately 1.37 million units, which would be a November record, smashing the previous record of 1.32 million set back in 2001. So far, with about 75 to 80% of manufacturers reporting so far today, it's looking like that forecast will hold true, maybe slightly higher, in the realm of 17.7 to 17.8 million SAR. And volume-wise, that's a 4% increase, maybe 5% by the end of the day. So sales are helped by an additional two selling days. I believe that results in basically a flat daily selling rate increase year over year. So as you would expect, we're seeing a lot of records being broken in November, both at the model level and manufacturer level. And I think one thing that we kind of expected, but it's confirmed, is this was a solid month of retail gains across the industry. I think there were some increases in fleet at GM, although they've been cutting back for a lot of the year. But across much of the rest of the industry, there were cutbacks in fleet, and yet we're still seeing record numbers for November. So following this month, sales through the first 11 months should total about 15.8 million units. That would be very slightly up from last year. So in terms of records, you know, 2015 was a record for the industry, between 17.4 and 17.5 million sales for the industry. It's really going to come down to December. It's going to come right down to the wire. And basically, if December comes in flat year over year, this will be a new record year, but it's going to be a challenge. There's one fewer selling day, and last December was incredibly strong. So I put it at about a 40% chance of a new record for the industry. In terms of economic factors that we look at, gas prices being a big one, national average around $2.15, which is up slightly, but still consistent, which I think is the key. And obviously, that still helps trucks and SUVs, which continue actually growing in share. This month, we're still tallying the numbers, but we could see light trucks outselling cars 2-to-1, which would be the highest ratio ever. Unemployment is still steady, under 5% in October, and then just got this number, but consumer confidence was up quite a bit in November, climbed 7 points up to 107, which speaks to maybe some stabilization in terms of consumer sentiment, and certainly bodes well for the auto industry. Looking ahead into 2017, we're expecting a range to be slightly down next versus this year. We don't expect another record next year. We're thinking 16.8 to 17.3 million units right now for a number of factors, but We think incentive spend has been rising quite significantly over the last couple of years and hasn't really resulted in retail sales growth as you might expect. So we expect manufacturers to reconsider this the strategy and perhaps cut back in terms of production and incentives next year. And also, residual values are declining as used car supply and off-lease returns increase. I think we're expecting an additional 500,000 returns next year, and that's just going to put downward pressure on used car values and make those more attractive versus buying new. So that could also impact leasing as well, which, as we know, is above 30% and hasn't shown signs of really coming down when you would expect that when residual values are falling. So that's just some of the things that we're looking for as we look forward. But I'll turn it over to Michelle with more on November.
Okay. So thank you, Tim. So I'm going to talk about what we saw happen through the develop through the month. What we saw at the very start of the month is the total number of incentive programs across the industry was relatively low. Actually, a Cox Automotive Company AIS rebates in Ann Arbor calculated about 42% fewer programs than in October starting the month. But then what we saw as the election ended and the Thanksgiving holiday and Black Friday approached, many automakers poured on the incentives, not so much in big dollar terms, but in numbers of programs, and they really cranked up the volume on those promotions, which could be heard without all the election ads to compete with. And we did see that drive traffic. In fact, the AIS rebates folks worked on Thanksgiving morning to input programs that were announced that very morning, and that's never happened before. So by the end of the month, it looks like the number of incentives program was as high as we've ever seen. It should be noted, too, that these programs have become very specific to regions, models, and right down to the specific VIN of the vehicle. The promotions worked. KBB reported an 8% rise in Black Friday shopping traffic compared with the previous three Fridays, and it was higher than Black Friday of 2015. Dealer.com, which operates 62% of the nation's dealer websites, saw a 3% increase in shopping traffic. Incentives on hybrids and electric vehicles were among the highest due to slumping sales. And the other high category was pickup trucks for a totally different reason. That segment is becoming very competitive. No one wants to give up any ground in that very highly profitable segment. Another interesting incentive action we saw was VW backed away a bit, and I just saw their sales come out 24% up. But we saw Hyundai jump in and try to attract some VW buyers with some incentives. Obviously, trucks were a huge story this month. The Ford F-Series had sales of over 72,000, and we have seen the Ford Super Duty, just introduced, jump to the number three spot on Auto Trader's top 20 most shopped vehicles, jumping a bunch of spaces. In terms of specific manufacturers, GM had signaled to us that fleet sales were going to be up, and if you look at Chevy Malibu and Buick Regal, it looks like they were in that order. They continue to do very well with the smaller Colorado and Canyon trucks, as well as Silverado and Sierra. We are seeing some Chevy do some very specific, highly targeted incentives on some versions of the Silverado in certain markets. Cadillac strength came mostly from sport utilities, as we've seen that shift from cars to sport utilities really take hold in the luxury market as much as the non-luxury. And the T5 is now Cadillac's best-selling model, which it replaced the SRX, which was its best-selling model, and that's good news. I think the only thing that can be said is Cadillac needs more sport utilities. Ford finally had a good month, and mostly from retail sales since its fleet orders were down, and its strength came from high-profit trucks and sport utilities. Ford sales were down again, some of them double digits. Only the hybrid C-Max was up, but that has some very significant incentives on it. Fiat Chrysler sales were down 14%, again, some very tough comparisons, and of course they restated some of their sales. But the bright spot in November was the Ram vans and pickup trucks, and we have seen Fiat Chrysler do some very targeted incentives on that all-important market. And, of course, the Toyota, Honda, Nissan, again, Toyota, Nissan specifically, the strength is in trucks and sport utilities. At Honda, Honda definitely defies the bucks the trend with car sales, and they don't do it without huge incentives. That didn't carry over to Acura, where only the MDX sport utility really had a meaningful sales increase. So that's kind of how we saw the month. I think we should open it up to questions.
Just a reminder, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes from the line of Deanne Durbin from the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, Deanne.
Hi. Thanks for doing the call. Sure. Do you have an actual incentive amount in the increase or decrease?
We do not calculate it that way, and you know, it would be estimated until sales are in. Maybe, Tim,
okay.
You can address some of that.
No, you're exactly right.
That's fine. And also, I know you said they were up 8%. The Black Friday shopping traffic increased 8% over the previous three Fridays. How did the weeks sort out in terms of, like, percentage of sales? Like, percentage of sales in the final week, was that as much as 50%? Was it lower than that? Do you have any calculation like that?
I don't offhand.
Yeah, we won't compile that for a while, just because we don't have the numbers yet.
Okay, I'm 0 for 2.
But typically, Deanne, I mean, the bulk of sales, I can't remember the number, 30% comes into my head, but it comes at the end of the month.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
And so then you add in the holiday there. So.
And then it bumps up even more.
I think it's fair to say a big chunk of the sales came at that time.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Greg Gardner from Detroit Free Press. Your line is open.
Hi, Greg.
Good morning, everyone. Hi. Could you elaborate a bit on GM increasing its fleet activity in the month? I mean, you mentioned Malibu and Regal, but were there other segments?
Well, what GM signaled to us was that it was a mix. But if you look at the big numbers of, you know, Regal was way up, Malibu was way up, and those are, you know, would be typical in a daily rental
mm-hmm.
fleet. But
okay.
there may be some others in there. Those jumped out at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't see their whole fleet order, but that they when I asked, they said it was kind of across the board. But those are obvious ones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's important to note, too, that their strategy all throughout the year has been cutting fleet, which we see that as a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably just a month where it was the timing of orders is my
right.
guess. So I mean, I don't think it's anything to be you know, concerned about too much.
No, and
anyway.
I think they'll be right back. I think by when all is said and done by the end of the year, their fleet sales will be down substantially.
Mm-hmm.
A fluky month for them.
And you said that. It was Toyota that's bucking the trend.
No, to Honda.
Honda, okay.
On cars. I mean, and that's typically the case. I mean, Accord, Civic, you know, they do well in cars when others are struggling. And they do it without much in the way of incentives. Honda's always on the lower end of the incentive spectrum.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Nick Zulovich from Subprime Auto Finance. Your line is open.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. Good morning, Tim and Michelle. Thank you so much for the time this morning. A subject I wanted to delve into a bit was negative equity that might be associated with trade-ins that shoppers and consumers are arriving at the dealership with. What, and just anecdotal terms, just from your observations, what would you say is an amount of negative equity that would cause a problem when a consumer and a dealer and a finance company are trying to get a deal done? And again, just from your observations, just how much is negative equity becoming a problem? How much does it gum up the financing, the negotiations at the dealership? Just what are your thoughts there? I'd appreciate thoughts from both of you.
Way out of my league. I know you'd asked that question yesterday, and I don't have anything on that. I mean, we could do some digging, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't have hard data. Sorry, Nick, but just thinking about it, it's a great question, and it's going to be perhaps a growing issue in the next couple of years, but I don't know that it's a significant problem right now. Just looking at used car values year over year, they're down, 2 to 3%. But I think that's something that we expect to probably worsen in the next couple of years. That's going to have an impact on new car sales, certainly, and one of the reasons why we expect to see those start to come down. Truthfully, I don't know what impact it will have on individual deals, but it might. I don't know. It might be an issue.
I certainly wouldn't say it helps in negotiating at a dealership.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, thanks again so much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mr. Joe Overby from Autory Marketing. Your line is open.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for the call. So we saw this morning that Penske Automotive has purchased a used car standalone store or used car standalone retailer. Now, four of the six public groups have those. So what about the current used car market environment do you think is particularly attractive to dealer groups these days?
Tim? I didn't see that news, so I'm totally unaware.
My guess is they probably see it as the next growing business, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, we know that there's an influx of supply this year, next year, the year after that, and also what we see is units lasting longer and longer. The average age of cars is still growing, which speaks to the quality of the build quality, the reliability. Folks are keeping their cars longer. There's more of a market for these used cars. Just if you think about it, purely because they last longer, they stay on the roads longer, and so maybe that has something to do with it. And we also know that used cars provide more of a profit than new cars for dealers. So there's opportunity there, I guess.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Rye Drusen from San Antonio Express. Your line is open.
Hey, everyone.
Morning.
Morning. Thanks so much for the call. Out here we have a major Toyota manufacturing plant that makes Tacomas and Tundras. And I was just wondering, when it comes to pickup production and sales, are companies like Toyota, are they making real challenges right now to establish pickup truck makers like Ford and GM?
It's always been a challenge, but Toyota has, in my mind, they've established their foothold in the segments. The Detroit manufacturers hold, I think, 90% of the volume, 95% maybe in the full size trucks, but in the mid size truck category, Toyota still holds It used to be higher, but now I think it's 40 or 50%. So, and one other thing that we see too is the Toyota trucks hold their value extremely well. So, you know, they have a loyal owner base, and they have high resale values. I think both the Tundra and the Tacoma are at the top of the segments in terms of residual values. If you exclude, you know, heavy duty or 2500 and above trucks, I think it's more of a challenge for other manufacturers, maybe such as Nissan, to get into those markets.
Sorry, Michelle, I thought I heard you may have.
No, I was just going to. I mean, and the other thing we know is the loyalty in the to brands in the truck market is the strongest of in pretty much any segment. So, it's really tough to go after those. So.
Okay. And a follow-up question I have is, we recently had Toyota's North American CEO, Jim Lentz, come out to the plant here, and he, when asked, he said that expansion is always a possibility, but he said that we have to see what the effect of basically fuel efficiency regulations will have on the marketplace, because as of now, through 2025, there have to be a 4% increase per year on fuel efficiency. Now, given that we have had the election has concluded, we do now have a Trump administration coming in January. Do you see that administration being able to either repeal or change any regulations that have been set in place up till now that could lead to a shift in the automotive market, particularly with trucks?
Well, I would say since the election, everything's in play. You know, yesterday the EPA announced their, you know, final 2025, that could end up changing. We still don't, you know, what's going to happen with trade deals like NAFTA and such, because a lot of parts come from Mexico, even if they don't, including, you know, they also build vehicles there. I think there's just so much in the air, and I think all of that's going to be negotiable. Certainly the automakers would like to stretch out those the fuel economy standards. That may happen. And the other thing that I think could have a play with, have some impact on truck sales, is a major infrastructure program. That could generate higher truck sales. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of ifs, which makes it impossible to predict exactly what's going to happen.
Okay. Great. Well, hey, thank you again. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Ms. Megan Lampinen from Automotive World. Your line is open.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, guys. I was interested in hearing your thoughts a little bit more on the luxury segment, and particularly what you thought about Cadillac's return to endurance racing. Is this intended primarily as a means of promoting high-performance road models? Or does it intend sort of to migrate racetrack technology onto its road models? What's the significance sort of this investment here?
I am no expert on racing. I will just say that, you know, what we have seen happen in the non-luxury market, this big shift away from traditional cars to sport utilities and trucks, we see that exponentially in the luxury segment. So automakers who do really luxury makers who have a strong portfolio of luxury sport utilities are doing better than those that emphasize cars. How racing fits into that, maybe Tim can speculate. A lot of that has to do with image and raising the image of the brand as a performance and technology.
I'm not familiar with that investment, but it might. Cadillac has an interesting, I don't want to call it problem, but you know, they need to. This has been a constant struggle to establish a brand identity, and you know, I think they've kind of been trying to reinvent themselves, and you know, the cars have not, I guess, done the job recently. So, I mean, maybe that's a part of that. Because, I mean, you think you have a wide range of vehicles available, from, you know, the small sedan to, you know, the large CT6 now. You have the CTS-V, you know, certainly the sport, a great sport sedan, but, I mean, I don't know. How do you identify a Cadillac? I mean, maybe is it now, are they now being identified by the SUVs, the SRX, the XT5, like a lot of the other luxury manufacturers? So that probably doesn't answer your question, but.
They're a work in progress. They're a work in progress. I mean, they've been a work in progress. And, I mean,
yeah.
I was a journalist covering the turnaround of Cadillac back in 1992. So this has been, it is not easy to turn around a brand, especially a luxury brand, and it takes a long time. It takes a consistent course and constant new products and technologies. So that's the road they're on.
Can I get a quick comparison between how Cadillac and Lincoln are faring?
Well, Lincoln's late to the game on it. This is going to, and by, they will acknowledge this. It's a long, long journey for them as well. They're taking a different approach. They're doing it's not about performance so much. It's more about experience and, they call it quiet luxury. We'll see which one works. But both have a long way to go. Cadillac got an earlier start, but it has had fits and starts along the way.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jordyn Gerdilowski from the Vindicator of Youngstown, Ohio. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Hi, everyone. I'm calling from Youngstown, Ohio, which is home to the plant that manufactures the Chevy Cruze. So I'm wondering if you can just comment specifically on what we're seeing with the Cruze.
Well, I think they were up 2% this month, and there may have been some fleet sales in there. They're in a tough place. They've introduced a new car. It's getting wonderful reviews, but the market just prefers sport utility vehicles. So it's, they knew out of the gate that this was going to be a tough go. We don't see consumers switching back to cars anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, the same is true for any manufacturer with a compact car, pretty much, maybe outside the Civic, which bucks the trend like Honda has been doing, like Michelle said. The good news is, it's a very solid product, and you need a compact car in your lineup if you're a major player. You need to get the younger buyers, the people who are just getting into the brands, so that one day, they can step up and move into the more expensive, higher end models.
And by the way, they sell a lot of them. I mean, we talk about, the car market being soft, but those are still very large segments. And, if we saw a shift in gas prices or something, and to meet the fuel economy standards, the automakers have to have those in their fleet.
Mm-hmm. The Cruze has had kind of consistent year-over-year growth over the last several months, obviously pretty modest this month, and yet the plant has announced that it's scaling back production and laying off workers. Is this, how do we make sense of that? Is it just not enough?
It's fully what I will expect going forward, and we saw this from Ford. Ford cut back on production of Focus and Mustang. We're seeing General Motors cut back on Cruze and Camaro. Those are segments that are just a little soft. They have pretty hefty incentives on vehicles, and yet that's not moving it. So they don't want to go crazy with incentives, and so they are cutting back production. We are seeing automakers be very disciplined in being willing to cut production to meet demand rather than letting inventories get bloated and then having to have a fire sale on those.
Yeah, like Michelle said, I think this is going to become a lot more normal, especially we've started to see it this year, but even next year we're going to see a lot more of it. And that's one of the reasons why we're more conservative on our 2017 forecast. We think sales will be down.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. All right, there are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to you, presenters.
Great. Keep an eye out for next month's call-in details. If you need anything else, please feel free to reach out to the Kelley Blue Book or AutoTrader public relations teams, and we'll be happy to help. Thank you all for joining, and have a great day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.